The stories continue to come forward to our eyes and ears about a student bullied at school who either takes their own life or lashes out at the lives of others. Even with a strong anti-bullying law, New Jersey lags behind when it comes to collecting data to determine the level of bullying which is taking place at our schools. That creates the challenge of dealing with a problem that you don't know the degree the problem is stationed at. Joining us now to discuss why this absence of information exists and what needs to be done to change this is the director of the New Jersey Coalition for Bullying Awareness and Prevention, Stuart Green. Thanks for being here today, Mr. Green.
Sure, Chris. Hi.
NJBullying.org. Learn more about this issue and the work of the coalition. So talk about the void of data, which, again, no matter what, pick a situation, a reason, the cause, a concern, without data, you're not going to come to a solution. So it seems like this is an important void that has to be addressed.
It is a void. It isn't a complete void. And the New Jersey Department of Education makes some good efforts to collect that data, and some schools report it better than others. The longstanding problem in New Jersey is that all of the data that we have about bullying is self-report by school administrators to the Department of Education. And the problem with self-reporting, of course, is that it's influenced by a lot of things. So, for example, one of the main instruments, the main one that New Jersey has always used has been the Electronic Violence and Vandalism Reporting Survey. And as we've pointed out for many years now, when the survey results are reported each year, many districts in New Jersey report that over the preceding year they've had 0 to 2 incidents of any of those things. One of my colleagues has said many times, if the data on the EVVRS, as it's called, was actually true, New Jersey would be the most peaceful geographic area in the history of the world.
Yeah.
So it's a problem. And New Jersey also has a uniquely bad law, as I wrote about in the column in the Star Ledger last week, which is it has a law requiring signed parental consent and notification for any surveying that's being done of students on a range of important issues, including violence, of which bullying is a common form. So students who don't have parental consent and signatures aren't able to report their experiences when these surveys are done. And that's a big, longstanding problem. A key example of it is that every 2 years, the Centers for Disease Control, the federal government, does a survey of youth nationally, the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance, it's called, and they report that data, which is good because it allows you to compare your data to other states and really get a sense of how the country is doing on important issues affecting youth. But in order for your data to be part of the YRBS, as it's called, you have to obtain at least 60% response rate from the students you survey with the questions you ask in your state. And primarily because of that law, this opt-in consent law, New Jersey doesn't reach 60%. So New Jersey's data is not reported in this national survey, limiting our ability to compare ourselves to other states, for example. So these are big data problems in New Jersey. And New Jersey has suffered from this, including in terms of funding. Under a funding initiative from the Federal Department of Education during the Obama administration, there was a lot of money available to different states who had to compete to win these grants. And New Jersey was basically limited in being able to compete because its data was so deficient and suspect. And, you know, that was just known at the time. I think we lost out on a $14 million grant, but it's long ago, so it's a while back, so I may not be recalling the number accurately.
And there's so many organizations like yours, and there was a student in Northwest New Jersey started an organization, Students Against Being Bullied. That absence of funding is a hindrance to the work that all of you are doing. The numbers, the CDC numbers that you mentioned with the 60% benchmark participation, is that where the data for the New Jersey Student Health Survey comes from?
Well, that's supposed to contribute to that. And what makes you ask about that in particular?
Well, because there's been an absence of any current data. The last current data for the New Jersey Student Health Survey is 2013.
I mean, the data problem is pervasive. It really limits a lot of things and affects everything. And you really need better surveying. Up until just a few years ago, the Department of Education didn't even have a survey that was assessing school climate, which is the major factor underlying whether bullying occurs or how it's addressed. To its credit, it developed a school climate survey and rolled that out within the last few years. But again, typical of New Jersey, the problem is that participation and administration of the school climate survey is voluntary. So schools can decide to participate in that or not. On all levels, we have a data problem in New Jersey when it comes to these issues, even though, the state tries.
I mean, I'm trying to think, why would a parent not allow their child to take part? Maybe a solution is to reverse, as you write in the op-ed, mm-hmm. to make it automatic. You have to opt out rather than opt in, and maybe take out this part of the survey involves sexual activity, for example, which looking at the various elements, it's violence, addiction, and sexuality. Mm-hmm. Are the top issues, and maybe the sexuality part might be the hot button for some parents. I mean, it's valuable data. I understand the purpose of it, but maybe mm-hmm. separate that out, or maybe separate the bullying and student violence out into its own, and maybe get that participation rate back up.
You mean get the participation rate back up, leaving the current opt-in law in place?
I think doing one would automatically take care of the other.
I don't think so. Part of the problem, Chris, is that just as for you, for whatever reason, you would take the sexuality thing out, other people would take other things out. Once you start, sort of adjusting things like that to everybody's individual dispositions, you end up with a cut-up sort of surveying process. The sexuality issue is also important. You want to know what youths are, the problems youths are experiencing, and as any family physician or pediatrician can tell you, when it comes to dealing with adolescents in particular, those are big areas of youth functioning, play a role in youth mental health. These are things that educators and public health folks and everyone wants to ask students about, and that's where you want your best data to come from what students actually report about their real experiences. So I wouldn't limit the surveying. I would just change the law from opt-in to opt-out. Opt-out would give parents who really don't want to participate an option. They could opt out. The problem with the current law is that some of the parents, of course, don't opt in because they've thought about it and they've looked at the material and they really don't want their kid participating for whatever reason. Okay, that's a relatively small percentage. A lot of the rest of the non-participation just comes from inertia. In other words, researchers know this very well. If you send out a survey, you do any kind of surveying to anybody, you're going to get, at least initially, if you just do the survey once, maybe a 30-40% response. There's a lot of inertia in any population you want to survey when it comes to responding to survey requests. So it'd be one thing if you had an entire population of parents who thoughtfully considered whether they want their kids to participate in this surveying, and they looked it over, and based on, I'm not sure what, but based on their beliefs, their parenting opinions, they decide not to participate. But indications are that the largest percentage of non-participation just comes from parents who it's one more thing to do. You know, it's not easy being a parent, even with one kid, let alone multiple kids. Parents have a lot to do, especially these days. And this is one more thing. So you get a lot of non-participation for different reasons. And it really sort of kills your survey process. It leads to what researchers call selection bias, which means that you do any kind of research with any population, and the one thing you don't want is the people you're studying sort of selecting themselves out from participation in your research. They can do that. They have a right to do that, but it really affects the quality of your research. As in this case.
Valid points. We're wrapping up our time with Stuart Green, who's the director of the New Jersey Coalition for Bullying Awareness and Prevention. NGBullying.org is a website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Is there a concern that school administrators are not encouraging the participation needed for this study? Is that part of the challenge as well?
Yeah, actually, it's a good point you raised. That's part of a larger issue, which is the degree to which parents in general are engaged. That's the sort of jargon we use, engaged or connected with school life. There's a pretty low level of parent participation in schools. And this is a big problem for lots of different areas of functioning, including surveying, things like that. And that's not to blame the parents at all. Again, parents are busy and, it can be intimidating in some ways to, step forward and just get very involved, in the school for some families. And so it's not to blame the parents. It's really to say that schools need to do a lot more in general to engage parents. A prime example of that is that if you look at parent participation in, for example, parent-teacher association functions, parent-teacher councils, the meetings that take place at school, say a peak meeting would be the annual budget meeting. If you're a parent, you're probably familiar with that. Typical parent participation in those meetings is in the low percentiles. For example, if you have, 400 kids in a school, so potentially 800 parents, maybe less, some single parents, so you have 400 to 800 parents and guardians that could come into that meeting. What do you think the average attendance is at meetings like that? And this is data that's available. It's not well studied, but we get reports of it. What do you think the average number would be, Chris?
I put it at on a good night, maybe 30%.
Yeah, that would be something around maybe 40 parents, 50 if you're lucky. It's very low. 30% is actually, it would be pretty high. 30% would, in a 400-kid school, 30% might mean you have anywhere from 100 to 200 parents there. No, the meetings even, don't come close to that in most cases.
Wow, that's you've seen, no doubt, as I have because I've talked about this topic for years of school bullying, how often the schools say, gee, we didn't even know that was happening.
Well, you're raising lots of good points, and that's another good one, which is, right now we have a sort of system in which parents and kids are supposed to report, the stuff that's happened to them, like report bullying, which even to parents and kids feels a little bit as if they were dealing with a police station instead of a school, or it was an episode of Law and Order. And the reality is that in every school, every kid should have at least one adult in the school. Of course, most of the adults in a school are teachers, but there are other adults as well. Every kid should have at least one adult who knows that kid really well. And not only as a student, not only academic performance, but knows, I'll use some jargon, the kid's social and emotional status and how the kid is doing and whether the kid is connected to the school and feels engaged or feels isolated or hates school, quote unquote. And if there was even one adult in the school that knew, not one adult who knows every kid, right? But, each kid has one adult like that who knows them. That adult would be aware that kid was being bullied without even having to wait for a parent or kid report of it. Because don't forget, bullying, by definition, is virtually always a pattern of negative acts. In other words, in 20 years of taking phone calls on our hotline from parents, I've almost never, maybe once in 20 years, gotten a phone call where somebody says, my kid was bullied yesterday, and prior to that, their life at school was perfect. This stuff typically happens over the course of months and sometimes years. So there's plenty of opportunity for school adults to know what's happening in the life of the children in their care. But instead, you get this very incident-focused, sort of bureaucratic, legalistic, formalistic, I'm using all the jargons, but, you know, law and order type, you know, take on bullying, in which, you know, there's a report of an incident, you know, now investigate it. You know, and of course, investigation of it, if we use that word, is required by the law. But we shouldn't have needed to have a law. In other words, from an advocate's point of view, I guess mine, knowing whether kids are being repeatedly hurt or not seems to me like a fundamental responsibility of all educators and all schools. And it shouldn't have taken a law to remind educators to pay much more attention to this issue of whether kids are experiencing violence in school, whether kids are engaged or connected to the school, et cetera, et cetera. But that really wasn't happening to the extent needed, so we needed a law. But the response to the law has often been to the what we call the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. And paying attention to the letter of the law only means that you get this very sort of legally oriented, you know, bureaucratic approach to bullying. You know, there are even schools where kids have been bullied, where the kids are asked by administrators to, you know, write about what happened to them and submit forms and things like that. And that really doesn't feel right to kids or families.
No, it's a multifaceted responsibility of the parents, the self-reporting, the looking for stability in the foundation, the schools, the administrators, the educators. And as you write, Mr. Green, the legislators in Trenton have to look at the idea, which might have been worthy at first, but obviously if there's a malfunction, you want to fix it. Your idea seems to be a quick and simple fix that could make the difference of filling in the void to properly address the problem.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
Want to learn more about this issue and find out if you believe that your child, or if you're on the younger side of things and you're listening to us right now, which we do have many teens listening from time to time, and you want to find a solution to a bullying issue that is striking your home, njbullying.org is a great starting point. You find out more about the hotline number, resources, and the most important part is go to somebody. And don't be, remember the story from a couple of years ago, Mallory Grossman in Rockaway Township, 12 years old, even went to the school and they didn't properly address it. And there was one of those many unfortunate tragic ends to that story that we have to find every way possible to make sure it does not happen again. Stuart Green, thanks for being here today.
Sure, absolutely, Chris. Glad to.